You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Camila Aisha Moon. Camila, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me, Brainerd.
Camila, I know you're going to read some poems today, and we're going to talk about your work, but to begin with, I know you're in Decatur, just outside of Atlanta. What are you involved in at the moment? Or maybe you're finishing up other projects, but or involved in multiple projects, but what's on your plate, so to speak, at the moment?
Well, I just got back, actually, from McDowell Colony. I was there for about 5 weeks, and I was working on my third poetry collection and also writing essays for collected essays that I'm working towards. So that was a very fruitful time. I teach at Agnes Scott College, and so it's kind of time to start thinking about the fall classes and getting things in order for that. But it was good to have some time to work on my own work this summer.
Yeah,
my third poetry collection. Yeah, it was great. My third poetry collection is coming along. It's pretty close. I don't ever want to rush anything, but yeah, I'm excited for it.
And I want to talk about that, but also about when you were at McDowell, you said you were working on your collected essays. What were those collected essays?
Well,
talk about the topics that you're exploring in those.
Sure. I've been writing essays, I guess, over the last maybe 10 years. And so I'm trying to work towards a collected book that I can put out in the world. But they range many different topics. I've written an essay about my work at Rikers Island, teaching poetry there for 5 years to both incarcerated men and women, and the profound experiences that happened as I was doing that work. I've written about the adjunct grind, which in my opinion is pretty much our country's version of indentured servitude at this moment, the way many people are being treated in that system. I've written about more personal things too, my father's artistic legacy as a visual artist and as a former member of the group The Valentines, which were kind of a doo-wop group in the 60s and early 70s. You know, that the artistic legacy passed between father and daughter. And just what I've kind of learned watching his life and the decisions he's made and the sacrifices he's had to make. So it's pretty wide-ranging.
And to talk about our country's indentured servants, that's a very interesting topic that seems hard not to ask you more about, especially since we're talking about an academic environment. Can you tell me a little bit about that essay?
Well, like many people, for various reasons, when I graduated from grad school, my job was to teach at many different institutions. And the way that the system is set up, most colleges are having well over half of their classes taught by people who aren't being paid anywhere near what full professors receive or full-time professors receive. And that's just grown worse and worse over the years. There's many articles and statistics around it. It doesn't serve the students. It doesn't serve the people who've worked hard to get through school, to get these advanced degrees, to come out and not be compensated fairly for their labor, because they're doing the same amount of labor as someone who's on a full-time line. And just getting a fraction of it. And so you hear of people with PhDs on food stamps, you know. I have my war stories for the 8 years that I did it, you know. You know, not having adequate health care, or consideration as a human being. You know, you're supposed to just keep going and not miss and do your part of the bargain, but there is no part of the bargain on their side at this point. And we're better than that. We're seeing widespread our country forgetting what the aim was, you know, what the whole point of America was. And that's one area that I write about because I did it for 8 years. So.
That's fascinating and, of course, disturbing, really, you know. Before we get into your poetry, because this is such an interesting area, I think, what are we getting into? I mean, my parents were also college teachers. My father taught at Bronx Community College. My mother at, Bank Street. And so I grew up kind of hearing, about all the difficulties and stress of college at the dinner table. And it does seem that that's an even the direction that you're talking about is, what's happening there? What do you think is the cause of all of this? Is it just, colleges cost more than ever. You know, I just had a son apply to college. It's almost every single college, if you're not getting lots of grants, is $70,000, including Sarah Lawrence. But, what's happening? It would seem that there's plenty of money out there, in terms of tuition. What do you think is causing this? Because you'd think that administrators of the school are interested in education and value teachers. So what do you think is happening?
No, you would think that's the aim. But what I've seen is that schools are functioning more like corporations than campuses of higher learning. And so when that kind of becomes the focus versus, the original reason why they were created, you start to see the things that we're seeing. Administrator salaries are higher than they've ever been. And I think that's something interesting to consider. I don't have any statistics in front of me, but I know even as late as, I would say, 1980, still the majority of classes at schools were taught by people who were being paid full-time to be their professors. And I just know that now most schools, it's 70% or more of the classes being taught by adjunct faculty at a fraction. I don't know where this money is going. I don't know to what end, other than what we're seeing just across the board with in other parts of society too. It's just corporate greed. How do we do the least, and gain the most?
Hmm. Yeah, it's so important to kind of work back against. I mean, how do we push back against that? Teachers, academic people interested in learning, is there any movement to push back against that or to stop that? Or does that seem kind
sure.
of like this inevitable tsunami?
I mean, I've certainly seen it, particularly in New York, which is where I was until 2 years ago. People starting to organize strikes, fighting for more rights for adjuncts, or like some more mandatory standard things that should be in place for anyone, especially people who are doing this kind of work. And I've seen there have been some strides, slowly. But, yeah, there is a fight, and I think it takes people saying, I can't work under these conditions and forcing schools to see that, and it takes I've also seen professors who have been fortunate enough to find that line, standing up with adjunct professors, like, these are our colleagues, and not submitting to the caste system, so to speak, right? So it's interesting, now I'm in a pretty good situation. I'm in a lovely situation, and so I really see firsthand the huge contrast in treatment. based on which box you're clicking in human resources, you know. I think we just need to close that gap everywhere that it exists.
Right.
Remember, we're all human all the time.
Right. So I know you're going to read a little bit today, which you want to focus on, because you've won numerous awards for your poetry and been widely published. So let's begin with one of the poems you've selected. What will you be reading first?
Okay, so I have a copy of my collection here, Starshine and Clay, which was released in fall of 2017. And I think I'll start with the first poem of the book, which is called Exploded Stars. Haunted by wholeness, bright debris sibilant beneath skin, tug-of-warring with gravity, we harvest shine from the caves of mouths and crevices of eyes, incandescent as we remember the most massive flares among us, detonate inside each other to hold tiny supernovae in our arms. Crushed bodies crave infusion, keep us brimming with enough energy to pass on, keep us lit and lying to ourselves about the eventual and sudden ways we black hole. It already happened, it's happening anyway, to happen soon, scattering all that we think matters so much now for another radiant giant to gather, then fling across galaxies again, reconstituted and scorched clean, new turmoil begging from the inside out to burn.
Thank you.
That
was very beautiful. So to talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
That's the beginning. That's the beginning of the series of poems in that book.
What's that?
I mean, does that comes at the beginning of that book?
Yeah, that's the first poem.
So, you know, very very beautiful. The way you read also has a beautiful sound to it, but also the words feel like they're almost part of a song. And I feel like I should ask, since you mentioned it at the beginning, what was your, if it's appropriate time to talk about that, what was your father's influence on a poem like that, or background, if that's possible to say?
Sure. My father, James Moon Jr., he's an interesting man, very gentle, present, not the man that's going to always have to talk and be known to be in the room. But when he does talk, everyone stops and listens because they know it's well considered. Mm-hmm. And I think his influence in my work, there are many, but that model to pay attention, and to bear witness and then to be deliberate about how you respond is definitely present in my work. And the musicality of it, his family, he's one of 10, and all of them play an instrument and sing. So I have a uncle that plays like woodwind instruments and another one that plays piano, and another one plays. They all kind of picked their instruments, and my father was a percussionist of the family, so he played the drums. And so I've always been around music. I've always heard it. My grandmother was she played in the church choir. She was the organist, and so I've always been around music, and I definitely know that informs word choice and how I create poetic lines. And then,
yeah, I guess that's what I meant. The musicality of the of that poem, and that does sound like, and that's very interesting to hear, being surrounded by that kind of music growing up. That would of course influence how you're speaking and how you're writing.
Yes, feel very fortunate for that.
Mm-hmm. And so I know you're going to read a few more. What's the next one that you're going to read?
Let's see here. Well, it kind of keeps in line with what we were talking about. and poetry, what poetry does, how it does many things, but it tries to capture a moment, it tries to soothe, it tries to transform pain into a song. And so I wrote this for a dear friend who lost her mother, and it's called Initiation for Rachel Eliza. Your friend has entered the tribe of those who've buried their mothers, and she is different. More of herself than ever, but a new layer, the affect of one unable to shake the sounds of leaving, to unsee profound rising preceding her own, waiting. What day is it? Does it matter? Where am I? Ease. Inducted into a society of hurried truces and anointing that becomes a steady hum in the music of all things. The full gray sky held its water as she rained and rained, a rain that will never dissipate, her legs forgetting for a spell why they were made, her husband's arms remembering what they're for. Shining, gorgeous grief, death's anchor, a terrible salvation to a family adrift. The sob and tremble of gone, gone, coursing through clasped hands. The duty of firstborn daughters, how it lengthens the spine and hollows the cheeks as she holds the widower's hand. Her crowded face in the mirror, morning walks with the grand dog ambushed by epiphany. Oh, the baby she won't meet. At any hour, snippets of speech, sensation, and memory surge, stranding former selves as starfish strung on some remote beach. The thought of calling, of being called, stopped in its tracks. No. The ground opened and we gave her back, set down the interstate and stood without falling among all of those stones. When mothers are lowered, daughters break out of boxes, unbossed by the minutia that comes with breathing. You saw it happen, see it in your friend's furrowed brow, the revised way she leans in a doorway across a kitchen counter. Her mother has gone there, dragging her into a new here. This missing flares. Gone is the banter of carefree homegirls. A deeper cadence reigns. That grown alto, mama heavy on her tongue, loud and loving in her mind, in lucid dreams. Heiress to her mother's wellspring and might, she finally gets what really means. When mothers are planted, daughters begin a furious blooming.
Thank you so much. That was very beautiful and, of course, very, very clear. I lost my mother a few years ago, so that's very powerful for me as well. That was written for a friend, you said, but was that also part of a collection that was published or no?
Yes, that was also in Star Shining Clay.
Okay.
Yeah,
please go on. Are we going to say something?
No, go ahead.
That was very beautiful. I'd love you to read the one more poem, because I know you have one more there in the queue for us.
I'd be happy to. This last one is, and it's called Still Life as Rocket. This is the part where the boosters begin to fall away, and I'm moving so fast it feels like slow motion. From here, I can see the blue contours of my journey against eternal midnight lit with torches held by unseen hands. I understand why many choose not to look. It really does take my breath away, steers this ride toward terror and away from thrill. I think of Joy, Tama, Carrie, Anthony, Sandra, and those lynched by cops, satellite spirits who didn't reach this orbit alive, how I must feel the fuel burning and praise them by not cursing the mirror or clinging to the rear view and its new blurriness, dare to comb defiant curls emblazoned by moonlight. There is so much still launching in me.
Oh, I love that. I'm so glad you read that. That one, that's such a gorgeous one, and seems to dovetail so nicely with the first one as well as the second one. Camille, it's been such a pleasure hearing your work. And there's, of course, links in here so that the listeners can learn more about your books and get your books. But I wanted to ask you the last question, which is, what are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious.
We're in a wonderful, wonderful time. There's so much good literature out there. Recently, I was reading through Toni Morrison's most recent collected writings, The Source of Self-Regard. She's such a treasure. And there was recently a documentary released about her life, too, The Pieces I Am. And so to have seen that documentary and to be reading anything that she's written is just gold. Gems just fall from her mouth. I'm also reading Ilya Kominsky's book, Deaf Republic, which is an amazing poetry collection that really speaks to what's happening globally in terms of the way that governments seem to be leaning now and how they're treating the people in their nations and war and just the struggle for what humanity really means. You know, when people say, oh, the humanity, they're generally thinking of good things, but clearly we're struggling to actually actualize that, right? But his book is just excellent. It's really hard to describe, but it really gets at the heart of the matter, no matter who you are or where you're from. So I highly recommend that. And I also was reading Jericho Brown's The Tradition, which is another powerful poetry collection that I highly recommend. He's a very clear writer. And in the tradition of many people, it's like his poems might appear sparse, but they're quite deep. I also highly recommend his book.
Camila, thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time and your work.
Thanks for having me. This has been great. Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.